the premiere of the streaming Cyboctacular was a smash hit!
Yeah!
Woo!
Woo!
The reviews are in. The friends of DeSoto. They love this live show.
And this thing is going to be available to stream until midnight on May 30th. That's the rest of the month, so get a ticket and watch it tonight, why don't you?
There's exclusive merch at this show that we didn't have available on tour.
And if you already support us on MaximumFun.org, you'll get a discount for your ticket. Check your email for a promo code.
The ticket link is at greatestgentour.com. Go check out the show, watch it with someone you love, and share your embarrassment with them.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation by two guys who are a little bit... blah! You know, my embarrassment sometimes manifests itself in stumbling over my words.
Causing you not to be able to communicate?
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure out something else to talk about at the top of the show, because this is 9 episodes in and we are still talking about it.
Talking about our embarrassment?
Yeah.
Let me tell you about something I'm not embarrassed about.
Okay.
I was followed by Mr. Chocolate Rain.
Tezande. On Twitter?
Today. Yeah.
Hey.
And I can only guess that it's because of the wild popularity of our Star Trek podcast.
Now let me ask you, I mean, I don't want to chocolate rain on your parade.
Oh, no, don't do that, please.
But does he follow like 85,000 people or?
Look, man, he still has to see my profile and then click follow.
I guess so. Or one of his interns.
You think Chocolate Rain has interns? Come on.
He's like a famous YouTube guy, right?
You know what would be awesome is if Tay did our intro.
Oh, that would be
like,
that'd be beautiful.
You know what? When you have another podcast, at what point do you have celebrity intros?
I mean, my other podcast is, I would say, mildly successful. So I don't think I'm quite at the celebrity intro phase yet.
Oh, geez. I wouldn't say that at all. I am profoundly envious of the popularity of your other podcast, and I only hope that we get half as popular as that one.
This, you know, part of the impetus for starting this was that we are doing a show about something that everybody already likes, or at least, you know, a lot of people already like, and the people that like it a lot. I think we may have shot ourselves in the foot making 9 back-to-back episodes just shitting on it relentlessly.
You think that's a mistake, huh?
It may turn out to have been. I don't know.
I've been thinking a lot about it, and like the series gets a lot better.
It sure
pretty
does.
Soon.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what we're going to talk about once it does.
We'll have to find the funny somewhere else.
This show is about to get real academic in about 5 episodes.
Yeah. A lot more discussion of, you know, Federation politics, when and where the Prime Directive should and should not be applied, finer details of how Data's positronic brain works.
Once Picard's pedophilia gets disproven once and for all.
Once he's definitively proved to be a true hero in the old sense of the word.
You know, he keeps turning down Beverly. Like, he's not doing himself any favors.
Yeah.
Ben, why don't you take us through Hide and Q?
Okay, so this is that Q episode that I almost insisted we didn't watch.
And about 5 minutes in, I was regretting that.
So the Enterprise is hurrying to a Federation outpost that has had a methane explosion injuring hundreds of colonists, I guess. And as they're...
What did that smell like?
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds like Chief Engineer Argyle was taking some shore leave.
Yeah, you don't want that free grazing on those outer ring planets.
So they're stopped by the Pendleton blanket in space again because the Q entity has reappeared. And it shows up on the bridge as this CG fleur-de-lis type of object, which I guess they're implying is what the queue really looks like, which is a very strange choice, and I don't think we ever see the queue look quite like that again, but...
I mean, it's sort of like a glowing ball with three snakes out of it, right?
Yeah.
Would that make the snakes the Lee or the Fleur?
I don't know. I don't know what that thing was supposed to be.
If you could take the shape of anything, why would you look like what Q does most of the time?
John DeLancey?
That, you know what? That sounded meaner than I actually intended it.
Well, so shortly enough, he's Starfleet Admiral John DeLancey, and he's got a very, very rockin' gold accented Starfleet uniform on.
Yeah, it puts Worf's sash to shame.
Seriously.
Sure.
And I guess he sort
of... He's all Mr. T'd out.
Yeah. I guess he's there to arbitrarily fuck with them again, and...
Yeah, he just sort of wants to play a game, right?
Yeah. So to make this game happen, he transports all of the bridge officers that are there. I guess Troy is not in this episode. They just kind of...
Yeah, they threw in a piece of captain's log that was like, yeah, Troy took a shuttle somewhere, so we're not going to see her.
Yeah. And I guess I read that Marina Sirtis was worried that she was getting cut from the show when they didn't have her in an entire episode. Fortunately, they did not.
Things probably work out in her character's favor, because if you're going to give Riker the Q power, probably his biggest target is going to be Troy.
She could have drowned it. That was a very gross joke. So they're transported to a classic season one planet, which is a bunch of shitty styrofoam boulders in a room with a bad sky that's just projected on a back wall. And
they didn't key out the green sky. I thought that was really lazy.
It really does look like a green screen. they are speculating about what planet they're on. There's two moons, and Q is there in a French field marshal costume planning a battle, and Riker goes up to him and you know, they're all very indignant and in their way, and the Q sort of starts drawing up the rules of the game. It's a game where death is on the line, and Yar gets real pissed at him and says that he's gone way too far, and she winds up back on the bridge of the Enterprise in the penalty box. And so back on the bridge, Picard is there by himself. He can't get out. None of the doors work. None of the radios work. He tries hitting buttons and gets the that button didn't work noise.
He tried turning it off and turning it back on again.
Yeah, he unplugged the ship and plugged it back in.
You know, all the standard methods didn't work for him.
There is a really, really uncomfortable scene here where Yar explains that they're stuck in this game and that she's in the penalty box, and if somebody else gets put in the penalty box, she'll die.
What in the hell am I doing? Crying?
Don't worry. There is a new ship standing order on the bridge. When one is in the penalty box, tears are permitted.
Captain.
It's incredibly badly written, and it is a much bigger acting challenge than Denise Crosby was really up to deliver these shitty, shitty lines.
I don't blame her at all.
No, like, it's not her fault.
It's a writer's room problem.
Yeah.
She makes a pass at Picard also.
Does she?
Did you not hear that part?
No.
It's almost a throwaway. She gets real upset
at
the prospect of dying.
He actually says, there's a new rule on the bridge that if you're in the penalty box, crying is okay.
Yeah, which is barf.
Yeah.
But he's comforting her. Like, he puts a hand on her shoulder. Like, she starts to feel better, and she turns back toward him and is like, Jean-Luc, if you weren't the captain. And then immediately another action piece happens, and so it's almost a throwaway before the next scene, but a pass was made.
Wow. I must have been dozing in and out.
Wow. Well, you really missed out.
So there's some fun fun and games back on the game planet where, you know, Worf is running around scouting and seeing what they're up against. And he discovers these soldiers that are dressed in French military uniforms, but are kind of aliens from the Halloween store kind of faces.
Yeah, we get another kind of rubber mask alien here.
Yeah.
Described as vicious animal things. Like, come on, guys. You got a thesaurus in the writer's room, don't you?
You would think.
So Worf's running around, and, like, he sort of engages the pig animals. Like, he fist fights a couple of them in a real Kirk style. Like, he jumps into frame on what clearly, like, a mini trampoline.
Right.
like, and tackles a few of them. He's really mixing it up. He's really, like, really socking some vicious animal things around on a scouting mission.
Yeah, and at some point in here, Q and Picard have this conversation where they sort of make a wager on the outcome of the game, and if Picard gets what he wants, Q will never bother them again. And I guess Q can do whatever he wants if... Q can do whatever he wants either way, but I guess he's going to keep his word. But Q says that he's definitely going to win because he's going to offer Riker something he can't resist, and that is Q powers. So they go back to the game, and now they don't have their phasers, and the aliens kill Worf by bayoneting him, and then they bayonet Wesley, and there's a great scene where Wesley, like, looks down and sees the blade coming through his belly, screams at the sky.
Wesley, someone who's used to something hard and sharp coming at him.
Poking
him. Yeah. Looks down and is a little less surprised than the rest of the crew, probably.
Yeah. poor kid dies, and I guess Riker uses his newly gotten power to... return the crew to the ship and bring Worf and Wesley back to life. So they're back on the ship and they realize that, like, no time has actually passed since the Q showed up, and they're still on their way to this planet to help these Federation citizens. And Picard makes Riker promise not to use these Q powers ever again because it's at our current stage of evolution, we can't be trusted with power like this. And they have the sort of classic, you know, power corrupts absolute, power corrupts absolutely talk. And so they get down to the planet and there's like four people left alive, and they've spent 10 times as much money on the set for this outpost as they did on the planet that they're running around on earlier.
Because
it's like a believable building with, you know, scorch marks and, you know, rubble
everywhere.
There's, like, everywhere.
Flooding water going through it, too.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest sets in the show, period. I mean, it's really cool.
You get Data, like, picking up styrofoam boulders and throwing them over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. That's fun to see.
Yeah. And they discover, like, a little girl under some rocks who is just shuffled loose this mortal coil, and Riker does not bring her back to life because he made a promise to the captain. So
she's got blood coming out of her mouth. That's how you know she's dead.
Yeah.
That's classic dead person makeup right there.
Yep. It is a guiding principle with Starfleet's base. Have you got to find it within yourself to stand up, tell the
truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform. You know that feeling of putting a ton of work into something only to realize that there was an easier way to do it all along? I had this experience with making the gift wrap on podshop.biz. I took those graphics and I hand-spaced them on a grid and a Photoshop file. And when I finally gave them to our Podshop guy, he was like, "Why did you do it that way?" And then he redid the work that took half a day for me to do in exactly 15 minutes. Websites are almost exactly like this. People have been making websites for a long time. And the best design principles are pretty much known and agreed upon at this point. That's why if you need to make a website, Squarespace is the place to do it. Because Squarespace has the guided design system, the templates, and the professional curation to make your website look its best without the need to figure all that stuff out for yourself. So go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hello, teachers and faculty. This is Janet Varney. I'm here to remind you that listening to my podcast, The JV Club with Janet Varney, is part of the curriculum for the school year. Learning about the teenage years of such guests as Allison Brie, Vicki Peterson, John Hodgman, and so many more is a valuable and enriching experience, one you have no choice but to embrace, because yes, listening is mandatory. The JV Club with Janet Varney is available every Thursday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember, no running in the halls.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPODCASTI.
Were you trying to put the name of the podcast there?
Yeah, I'm trying to spell it, but it's tricky.
Let me give it a try.
Okay.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, call STOPPAD. It'll never fit.
No, it will. Let me try. If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPDCOO. Ah, we are so close.
Stop podcasting yourself.
A podcast from MaximumFun.org.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go.
So they get back to the ship, and Riker's kind of getting bigger and bigger in his britches, and starts like talking to the captain in a very casual first name basis. And Q shows back up, and
he starts walking around like the Riker we get to know a little bit later too.
Yeah,
like real puffy chest.
Mm-hmm.
Real cock of the walk.
Yeah, he like goes in when he goes back to like talk to the captain about the fact that he didn't bring this girl back to life on the planet. He leans over the security console thing in as close to a sitting on the on a chair backwards as as you could get.
Yeah, I mean, who's the big dog now?
Yeah, so Hugh comes back and is like, "Hey, Riker, why don't you use your powers for good and show that you're such a nice guy." And give all these people everything they want. So the first thing he does is snap his fingers and turn Wesley from boy to man. And what a man
he turns him into
is.
An Ito.
Yeah, he really does. It's a very funny moment because Geordi goes like, "Hey, nice looking, Wesley.
You're 10 years older, a man. Hey, Wes. Not bad."
Yeah, that's real creepy. And they do that thing with Wesley's voice where they like slow it down a half of a click to make it sound deeper.
They pitch shift him to sound grown up. It's like, so it's this other actor, but with Will Wheaton's voice dubbed in.
Which is like actually something I want to request of you when you're producing these episodes. If you could just make me sound a little more masculine, I'd appreciate that.
We'll see what we can do. He offers to make Data a real boy, but Data declines, and then he gives Geordi his eyesight, and he takes off his visor and just turns around and looks at Yar, and he's like, "Wow, you're really pretty too."
Is that how you took that? Because I saw that as like confirming the suspicion that Geordi has had the hots for Tasha the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about this a lot more as we get later into the series, but Geordi has a very, very problematic way of dealing with women. Like he's very close to being like a men's rights activist type of guy.
Yeah, like if there's one bridge crew person who would be most interested in like the seduction community, it's probably Geordi.
It's 100% Geordi.
he's real awkward.
Yeah. So Geordi asks Riker to put him back like he was, and then so does Wesley. Says, like, "I want to get there at my own speed."
He gives Worf a lady friend, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he gives Worf a female Klingon who Worf proceeds to beat the shit out of.
And then Geordi, as one of the all-timers, he's like, "Worf, is that what sex is to you?"
"She's from a world now alien to me."
"Worf, is this your idea of sex?"
"This is sex. But I have no place for it in my life now."
Geordi, who basically admits he's never seen what sex is or knows how it works at all.
Yeah.
After watching Worf beat the shit out of someone. Like, I think he clearly has a backstory that's pretty dark.
Pretty dark.
And he admits it in that moment.
Yeah. That female Klingon character is wearing a pretty like dead-on Beyonce costume.
Oh yeah.
Like this is like something I feel like Beyonce definitely would have considered for a stage costume in the On the Run tour.
Yeah, it's fishnets and armor.
It's fishnets and armor with like it's like a bathing suit format with some bedazzling and some jewelry to it.
Yeah, yeah, and they just sort of growl at each other and hit each other.
Yeah. We're starting to understand what Worf meant when he said that he would have to restrain himself too much with Earth females.
Right.
So, because Earth females are not into getting walloped.
Yeah, go figure.
Go figure.
So Worf beats the shit out of this girl and then is finally like, I'm not attracted to this. Like this is not what I'm into anymore.
Yeah.
And then Riker takes her away.
Yeah, and Riker's duly embarrassed that he kind of, you know, thought giving everybody a saccharine sweet gift like this would make them want him to have these powers and use them. And so Picard is sort of vindicated in his wager, and the Q starts like yelling at the sky, like I guess he's in trouble with the rest of the continuum, and I guess he gets sort of like beamed away or whatever the continuum equivalent of that is, and Picard is duly pleased, and his trust in Riker is confirmed.
Yeah, I mean, from the moment that Q beams away and the conclusion of the episode where they journey along their way, I feel like it's maybe 15 seconds. It is a really weird transition.
Yeah.
Where Q's gone, Riker's powers are gone.
Okay, back to normal.
They all sit down on the bridge, and Picard's like, engage, let's go on to the next. Like, they don't really take any time to unpack what just happened.
Yeah.
Unlike us.
Right.
We've unpacked the shit out of this episode.
We will dwell on every little weird thing. Which longer nurse the
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Who's your drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I gotta go with Yar on this one. It's not Denise Crosby's fault. It's whoever wrote the scenes that have Yar in them. Just really, really whiffed big time. But the character is hugely problematic and ridiculous in this episode. And I put her in my penalty box.
I think your vote of Tasha like underscores something that I wanted to talk about, which was like she is not given much of a chance with the dialogue that's given to her.
No, it's sort of the first time that she's had anything to talk about that wasn't sort of a security matter. Like,
yeah,
this is the first, I mean, I guess other than banging away on Data, this is the first time her character has kind of had a personal moment.
Mm-hmm.
They just really, like, it's very ham-fisted. I think Denise Crosby left the show because she wanted to go, you know, do something more serious as an actor.
That makes sense.
And that's why her character gets killed off very soon. But I really can't blame her for that decision based on the fucking scene where she's crying and in Picard's arms. Just
yeah.
Really, really weird and uncomfortable to watch.
I think what's interesting is like the character of Q is given dialogue that's just as bad.
Yeah.
I mean, as I was watching this episode, I came away really impressed with John DeLancey's ability to deliver with a straight face and like give a line reading that really took the attention of the viewer to himself instead of the shitty dialogue.
Totally.
It's sort of a magic trick that was really impressive. And he does this time and time again. They put him in these silly costumes and they make him be super dramatic. And I am never laughing at him or his performance. I am amused by by what he's doing to the crew in a way that like makes all other considerations fall away. Like I think John Delancey's awesome.
Yeah, he and Patrick Stewart both kind of pull that magic trick. And there's a really fun scene where they're kind of trading Shakespeare quotes in the captain's ready room, and it's pretty clear that they can both do some Shakespeare justice, and almost that scene justifies the turd of an episode that surrounds it.
For the longest time, the viewer sort of understands that Wesley is their proxy.
Yeah.
For this universe. But after this episode, I sort of wonder if Q isn't a better proxy, because like time and time again, he sort of sees the potential of the crew and, you know, in parentheses, the potential of the TV show, and is like constantly frustrated with them. He thinks they're being stupid.
Right.
He challenges them in a way that they're not usually challenged. And it sort of made me think that like maybe Q is actually the proxy for the viewer instead of Wesley.
That's very interesting. He definitely runs through the entire series. Like, I think he has an episode every season, and he's on the first episode and last episode of the series as well. So that's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll enjoy my next Q episode more.
Hmm. Maybe you will. I hope you do. My drunk Shimoda.
Drunk Shimoda!
Is Commander Riker.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because this is a character that we understand to be ready for command. He wants command. Hmm. He wants more responsibility.
Yeah.
He's got a taste for adventure. And basically, he's given the ultimate ability to achieve that. And he throws it all away. And I think it's pretty bullshit that he turns down the Q power. I think the far more realistic conclusion to the story is that Riker accepts the power and then beams off the ship, and we like never see him again. Like, how could anyone resist that power?
Yeah,
like it is.
Again, why would you?
It's
want
basically
to?
Like, yeah, it's basically like living the holodeck for real.
Right? Why would, like, especially like after he already has it? Like, why is, what fealty does he have to Picard to, you know, make a promise like that?
Yeah, that was dumb.
It's sort of the bargain that the energy field alien that takes over Picard's brain a few episodes ago was offering Picard, except for way better and more advanced. There's actually like a tangible upside to the bargain.
Yeah, and that tension runs throughout the series, the whole idea of they could really do a lot of good, but they have rules about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So they would prefer to just stay out of it.
Strange.
Like, yeah, yeah, Riker, good one, man. You really blew it, I think.
I'm glad they kept him on, though, because he's so handsome. It's very easy on the eyes, that Riker.
He's just walking around the ship giving girls boob jobs. Like, like, God, that would have to be so frustrating. You're walking around.
Yeah, suddenly you've got back pain.
Yeah.
Your rack is 10 times the size it was.
God, just another Riker blowout. You want to give that guy a wide berth.
Yeah.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Oh, man. What's up next? What's our next episode?
Next episode is called Haven. Counselor Troy is caught between her feelings for Riker and her devotion to family customs when she faces a prearranged marriage. So this will be a visit from my other least favorite running character in the Star Trek universe, which is Troy's mom, who is, I think she was, she's the voice of the computer and also Gene Roddenberry's wife.
Well, that's convenient.
I think, what's her name? Majel Barrett or something like that?
Everyone hates nepotism.
Yeah, and for good reason. She's fucking annoying. Like, she's written to be annoying, and she succeeds.
The reception doesn't make it sound much better. An absolutely dreadful shotgun wedding episode. And Troy episodes tend to test the patience of even the most devoted Trek fan. Oh, no. I'll tell you what, man, I've got my veto out. I'm sort of rolling it around in my hand.
Finger hovering over the veto trigger.
God, but the thing is, like, I'm not reading ahead. If I veto this, we could get an even worse episode after.
That's a good point.
Oh, God, I just hate Troy's mom episodes.
Yeah.
God damn it.
It's so weird, like, that they, I mean, like, they clearly know that she's annoying, because every time she comes on after this, the characters like roll their eyes and try to make excuses to not be there or whatever.
Yeah, and look, I think this says a lot about like how good she is at playing annoying. Like, it's one thing to like have an annoying character and it be the fault of the actor portraying them. Like,
yeah.
But in this case, I feel like her performance is effective because it's supposed to evoke strong feelings. So, like, I don't think it's her fault. I think it's just annoying character.
Yep. Well, I'm...
Fuck it, man. I'm going to veto.
Oh, really?
I don't want it. I don't want it. Yeah.
I think, Adam, just because I'm a diabolical asshole, I'm going to nullify your veto.
Oh, my God. Oh, that sucks. That means we're out of vetoes for the rest of the season.
And this would be the season that you would want two vetoes.
Oh, God.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Wow. Well, kind of a lot happened on this episode of the show and also this episode of the podcast.
Yeah, this was a big one. It was Picard Cosby bit, but...
If you have any thoughts on the terrible mistakes we've made on this or any other episode, be sure to reach out to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen.
Yeah.
Or you can hit us up on our spiffy new website, gawk.biz.
Yeah. I don't know if there's actually a way for people to interact with us through that site, but, you know.
Isn't that how we would prefer it?
Yeah, probably.
Leave a message on our answering machine, our tape reel answering machine.
Yeah, also, if you really want to stick it to us and help other people find this podcast, leave a 5-star review at iTunes. That will spread our shame further and wider.
That's the most damage you could do to us, actually.
Yeah, pretty much. well, I guess we'll be back with another episode of The Greatest Generation.
We'll be dragged back to the next episode, given what you just did with the unveto.
Yeah, sorry.
God. All right. Yeah, we'll see you next time, guys.
I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica.
Bye.
Bye.
Picard.